I'm Laura Vinroot Poole. For 20 years, I've owned Capital, an internationally recognized specialty store. Capital has never really been about fashion. It's always been about people. What we wore was created to share the meaningful journeys that inspire me. From the designers and friends I meet on the road to the men and women with whom I work each day.
Everybody wants to know her.
Claire Crespo is a brilliant artist who wants us to see the world through a child's eyes. I hope you'll love this conversation about her journey as an artist, her deep connection to her roots, and how Jell-O changed her life. Claire Crespo, I'm so excited that you're here on the podcast.
Oh my gosh. I'm so excited to be here.
I want to tell you a little bit about how I know you. And I think it's kind of funny because I knew you multiple ways before I met you in person. And then I met you and it was like meeting. I was so starstruck because we have children the same age. And for Fifi, I had found your spooky like Halloween treat making thing just on like YouTube or something. I don't even know how I found it.
Oh my gosh.
And I got obsessed with it, and I watched Fifi and I watched every single one of them. We made one, and I can't remember which one, but so that was the first one. And I just was like, oh, this is just the cutest girl. I love this person so much.
Oh.
And then separately, I didn't know you were the same person. I bought my brother a full set, like an oyster set of crocheted oysters, crocheted Tabasco, and gave it to him for Christmas. And then I met you with Irene in Mexico, of all places.
Right.
And put all those things together. And I really just felt like I was meeting the biggest star of the world, which I was. But then you were actually really cool too, and just amazing.
Oh my gosh.
It was one of those times when meeting like your celebrity crush, they actually end up being incredible as you thought they would be.
Well, I never think, because I've done so many different weirdo things in my long life, that it's like nobody has ever, usually people haven't seen the different things. So they're like, oh, you do this, or you write kids' cookbooks, or you do fancy jewelry stores, or whatever, you know, like, and so it's so funny when somebody has actually like seen my weird road like this.
Well, and weird too, Claire, that like it was from different parts of that road, and I didn't know you were the same person. I think that was even weirder. That was like, I love this, and I love this, and it's the same person.
Oh my gosh, that makes me so happy, because often I'm sort of like confused by my road that I've been on, you know, and I'm like, who am I? What am I doing? Where am I going?
Well, and I think as an artist too, a lot of times, because it is such a sometimes isolating thing, that you feel like you're creating work in a vacuum and you don't know that anybody's ever appreciating it or enjoying it or any of that stuff.
Yes, so, exactly.
Claire, tell the listeners where you're from.
My family's from New Orleans, but I grew up in Baton Rouge, and I came very far west to Los Angeles to go to CalArts such a long time ago. And I never thought I would stay here, but I did.
Yeah.
Somehow I was hoodwinked into staying. So I've been in California for a long time.
I would imagine you drew a ton of inspiration from New Orleans and Baton Rouge and just the South in general.
Oh my gosh. I had a astrological reading a year ago. Somebody gave me a present and I did it. And the woman was like, your chart is all like all your inspiration comes from your roots, you know, like somehow she gleaned that from the stars, but it's really true. Like I do feel like it's because of where I'm from. Lots of things that I do. I think the food, you know, I do a lot of stuff that's about food, and I think that's because I'm from Louisiana and everybody just talks about eating and where they're going to have lunch, where they're going to, you know, what they're making that weekend. And, you know, the food is so big there. So I do think that is because of where I'm from. And I also, I had artist parents. My dad was head of the art department at LSU, and my mom was a painter and then an interior designer.
I didn't realize that both of them were artists.
Yeah. So I think like it wasn't a weird thing to do to like,
yeah.
Of course I like pushed it. I mean, I do think my dad had given me like a Jell-O cookbook when I was a kid, and it still is. I look at that book and I'm like, this is what made me into this Jell-O cookbook. It's like the best thing. It's designed by Pushpin Studios. Do you know who that is?
Tell me.
It was these amazing graphic designers. They did like Bob Dylan covers, and Milton Glaser is one of them. Anyway, they were these amazing graphic designers in the 60s and 70s. And they did this Jell-O cookbook that landed in my hands. And it just like, it had magic tricks in it, and it had a flip book in the corner of the pages of the book. I made every Jell-O recipe in that. I tortured my family with the Jell-O recipes. Like it, I made everything in it. I was totally obsessed with it. I was so into it. And I think that singular book like put me on a wild path.
You were a baker as well.
Yes. My grandmother was a big, big baker, and she, you know, that's what I did with her. So like I learned how to bake a cake and how to make cookies and how to do this and that with her. And that was such a warm, fun thing to do with her. So that still just makes me feel great.
Were you already making crazy cakes as a little person?
Yes. Oh my God. Well, I think my dad made me a Jaws cake when I was a kid with like a naked Barbie hanging from the light fixture above it. You know, like my dad and stepmom made me that. And yeah, so I mean, I think, yeah, the cakes were always part of my childhood. And then I was always the person that was bringing the birthday cake to somebody's, you know, party in college. And I mean, I think that is the funny thing, is I just take that stuff so seriously that I'm like, this is my job. I mean, that's, I mean, I was a music video producer after CalArts for a while. And, you know, I did that for years, and I quit abruptly. Like I was a executive producer at a production company, which was kind of a big job, you know, and right. I was like, I can't do this anymore. And everybody's like, what are you going to do? Like, what are you doing? I was like, I'm going to make Jell-O. And I literally like that. I like quit that big fat job and invented a Jell-O aquarium. Seriously, that's in my first cookbook, Jell-O Aquarium. I'm like, I've made it on the Today Show. I've made it on Good America. Like that Jell-O Aquarium was my ticket.
Well, and did your parents, I guess, was it clear sort of that you could find a pathway as an artist, and were your parents supportive in that?
I went off the rails, I have to say. I mean, because that, while my parents were both artists and, you know, encouraging when I was a kid, my my work later, like, I think confused them. I mean, it definitely confused my mom. My dad would try to understand. But yeah, my mom was always like, what are you doing? I mean, she still is, to be honest. Like, she's still like, what is your job? Like, I do think like my parents got a little confused about what I was trying to do. Anyway, I know they're proud of me, but I think they did get a little confused.
And you have a very unique style icon, I think, that is not part of your real family, but maybe part of your imaginary one. Can you tell me what this song might mean to you?
We'll begin with a spin, traveling in the world of my creation. What we'll see will define.
I'm kind of crying. Ah, I love him so much.
And wait, can I ask you, we were having this conversation yesterday. Do you love Willy Wonka so much, or do you love Gene Wilder so much?
Oh, well, right. I love Gene Wilder as Willy Wonka. I mean, definitely the book Willy Wonka is, he's darker and not quite as charming, and you can't see his suit.
But Gene Wilder is so incredible. But tell me why you love him so much.
Oh my gosh. Well, I'm scared to like really tell you how obsessed, but I'll try and tone it down a little bit. But I just find, okay, well, the flag that I sort of fly behind a lot of the things that I do is sort of encouraging kids or encouraging grownups or anybody to like keep your mind open, trust in the magical, and just believe in things that turn you on. Anyway, so Willy Wonka is entirely inspiring to me in his, you know, appreciation of children and children's wide open minds. And I just, you know, the imagination in that movie is just touches me. Yeah.
You walked down the aisle to that song, didn't you?
I did. It was played on accordion. Aww. By this guy on the bayou, like in outside of New Orleans. Oh my God. And yes, that's what I walked down the aisle to. I mean, that song is very, very important to me. And I mean, come on, his outfit. Like, I've been chasing that look. Like, I'm always like, it kind of looks like Willy Wonka, and I will buy it. Like, it was probably the fanciest party I've ever gone to. It was 2000. And it was a New Year's Eve party, and it was in Napa. And I found this Dries suit it was a skirt, but it was a long skirt. And it was, oh my God. And it had a velvet jacket that was fitted. And it was very, very, I mean, I still wear that. It's amazing, but it's very Willy Wonka. It was like Willy Wonka
moment. I love it. Well, I'm going to keep on looking for that for you. That's a great
thank
tip.
Thank you. Okay. I will buy it.
So talk to me a little bit about leaving the South, leaving Baton Rouge and the road to college in San Antonio, which is such a cool town itself. Yeah.
I started looking for the door in Baton Rouge in high school. I needed to see something else. And I don't know that I felt very, while I love where I'm from. But yeah. I needed to see some other stuff. And so I really, you know, worked hard in high school to kind of set myself up so I could get out. Yeah. And I ended up in Texas, which wasn't very far, but I went to college at Trinity in San Antonio. And then I went to UT for summer school. And then I just kept going west.
Were you studying art?
Kind of. I had a painting teacher that was very, very important. I was minoring in painting and I was majoring in communications, which I'm like, what is that? I don't even know what that is anyway.
I mean, that's what you do though. I think that's actually a great minor.
Yeah. Yeah. But I think my last job, I had worked one summer, like the summer before my senior year, I think I'd worked at a TV station in Baton Rouge in the art department. And what I was doing was drawing the weather maps.
I love that.
So like the fronts and the clouds and the, you know, like,
that's cool.
It was a fine job. I had this one, I mean, don't we all, we have this one teacher that, which maybe you've had a few, but I had this one painting teacher at Trinity, and he was like, what are you going to do? I was about to graduate. And he was like, what are you going to do? And I was like, I don't know. I mean, maybe I'm going to go back to the TV station and draw the weather maps, you know, like I really didn't have much of a plan. And he was like, I don't know if you're going to do that. And he was like, you better think hard about what it is that, what do you want to do? Don't think about a job. Think about like, what do you want to do? He was like trying to make me abstract what turned me on, you know, like.
And do you remember what your answer was?
And yeah, I was like, I was doing these paintings then that were all about like cars moving, and they were all about movement. Mm-hmm. And I was like, I want to make my paintings move. And he was like, you might want to be an animator. And I was like, oh, I can do that. And he was like, yeah. He's like, there's two places. You can go to CalArts. They have an animation program, or you can go to RISD. But CalArts is like the bigger one. And I was like, oh my gosh, I want to do that. That's what I want to do. I want to learn how to animate. And that's what I want to do. And I crammed a portfolio together, and he wrote me a letter and pushed me on my way. And I got in. It was so weird. Anyway, so I wanted to make my paintings move.
And I love that.
Moved to California to become an animator.
And you pursued that there. I mean, did you finish with a graduate degree in animation?
Yes, I got a master's in experimental animation.
I'm sure you met so many incredible people doing all different things at CalArts. Is that how you moved into producing music videos and film?
Yes, I was in a band.
That is not in my notes. Tell me about that.
I was in a really bad band, like a terrible art school band, but it was really fun. And we did have a kind of major musician in our band that went on to being really great. Beck was our singer, and I can't believe I'm saying this, and this is like all could be heard by public. Anyway, you're my very good friend. I'm telling you everything. I was in a band with Beck. It was kind of sad. We were such a dumb band that we kind of kicked him out of the band. Anyway, it was. We did his videos. We did that first loser video. The band was Steve Hampt, who is a great music video director, and we were we formed like a little production company, and we did his videos. Anyway, we did a bunch of his videos, and then we did other people's videos because he became such a big deal and everybody loved his videos. So anyway.
And did you enjoy it?
Well, yeah, I mean, it was so fun, you know. It was such a moment, and there was such good music, and videos were so amazing in that, like, early, you know, like, I got to work on Pavement videos and Beastie Boys and, you know, like all these great, you know, with great artists. And it was such a funny job, you know. You know, I was so scrappy and like in my like ex-girl outfit, you know, and I was the producer, and I mean, like, I didn't know what I was doing, but we knew how to make a little film, so I guess we, you know, did know what we were doing. But yeah, it was such a fun job. And all those, I worked with really cool directors. You know, I got to work with Spike Jonze and Roman Coppola and like all these amazing, talented Mike Mills. You know, it was just so fun to see how their brains worked and try and support their visions. And yeah, it was super, super fun. And it was good money, you know, like it was a real job, you know.
What was the defining moment in when you realized that it wasn't for you anymore?
Being a producer is kind of like throwing a party. Like, you're inviting, you know, you have to make sure the right people are together that are going to get along. And, you know, like, and I was good at it, but I definitely had things that I wanted to say creatively. While being a producer is somewhat creative, it can be depending on who you're working with. Like, I just had stuff to do, you know, and I always had stuff on the side. I actually did a little self-published cookbook, and, you know, I was crocheting food then.
Oyster sets. I was
doing some crocheted food. You know, so I had stuff on the side that like kept me satisfied like that, but it wasn't what I was doing. And at some point, like, music changed, and I was doing all these. My last year, I did a lot of Whitney Houston videos, and which was It was just not what I'd done before, you know, and just like, it got so sort of stressful and hectic, and the money was so big, and it was just all so wild, and it just wasn't, I was like, I gotta at least try to make Jell-O my job, you know. I just was like, if I don't try now, like, I'm never gonna try, and I've gotta try, so. I jumped out the window, and my big idea was to do a kids cooking show. That was my dream. And so like the first version was actually a website, and it was like animated versions of some of my recipes. It was like this flash site, and it was popular, and a publisher came to me and they were like, do you want to do a cookbook? And I was like, oh, well, I really want to do a kids cooking show, but I think a cookbook will maybe be a stepping stone to that. So I did my first cookbook, and it was really fun. And they let me do whatever I wanted, which was great. And it was just a wild experience, because everybody thought I was making a kids cookbook. And then when it was finished, they were like, wait, this maybe is for grownups too. So like they put it out on their adult label and their kid label. And it was like simultaneously in Vanity Fair and Nickelodeon magazine. Like it was just this wild like straddle that was so interesting to me. But
it's hard to, I mean, I don't even know how to begin to explain kind of all the things you've created. Has food always been a part of them? Because when I do rewind back, I mean, I guess a lot of them really do relate to food, from calendars to crochet to cookbooks to your show.
I think that sort of got cemented at CalArts. I really, you know, I was in that sort of art world. I was having some gallery shows. And what was interesting to me was talking to all kinds of people instead of just people that go to galleries. I liked the idea, like a goal was like, oh, if I could make a candy bar wrapper and it was in 7-Eleven, you know, like that would be so awesome. Like it's interesting to me to talk to everybody, or at least a bunch of people, you know, and instead of just this small art world, you know. So yeah. I felt like food was a way to do that, because everybody eats and everybody has lunch, and you know, like, you know, and it's not as precious, you know, it's like,
yeah.
So I loved the idea of my studio being my kitchen and creating something that everybody understood, you know, like that was more fun to me. And I had some weird art shows then that were like podiums with like a pot, like a pond pie sitting there, or the Jell-O aquarium, or whatever, like, and they would go away, you know, like it wasn't like you could hold on to it. So I like that too.
Well, and I also love the idea back to childhood too, just the idea of how much love comes through food, and in the South especially, I think it's just really a way to communicate love. I think my senior project in college, I'm an art major also, is all about kind of all the things that I learned in the kitchen through my grandmother to my mother to, you know, to my aunts, that all the things you hear, you learn all the family secrets, you learn all the, I mean, all the things kind of come through the kitchen. And it's this form of women, I don't know, like learning your history, but also learning how to do things.
Oh my gosh. Absolutely. And how to communicate with each other. And yeah. I mean, that's my, the treasures in my life are my recipe box from my grandmother, my recipe box from my aunt, who's no longer with us. And my dad was a major, major cook, and his notebook, his like kitchen notebook, like those are, it's so important to me.
You've just done this beautiful collaboration with, is it Heather Levine?
Yes. Heather Levine is a ceramicist in LA, and she asked me to do something with her. Yeah. And it sort of fed back to my roots, of course, like everything seems to over here. But it was my
my mama has that blue onion china that, and I just love it. I mean, I just love it. I love china. I love china patterns. I love, you know, like, oh God. And I wanted to do kind of a casual version, my version of that. And I did some blue and white plates.
Also brings me to your collaborations with Pam Shamshiri. And one of the things that is it Maison de Luz? The hotel in New Orleans that you and Pam worked on. And you did these incredible ceramic snakes.
Yes, the snakes, the friggin' snakes. Oh, I mean, my dad lived on a pond in Baton Rouge, and we have a little cabin out on the bayou. And I mean, even at my mom's house in Baton Rouge, like, there's always some friggin' black moccasin, like, literally dangling, you know, on a on a door, or like stuck inside. I mean, it's so crazy. The snakes freak me out. I'm so scared of them.
Did Pam grow up in California? I mean, what was Pam like, what are you doing? Like, why the snake?
Absolutely. But she knows my stories. I mean, there's a famous story of me and my mom in a canoe, and two moccasins fell into the canoe with us. And I mean, and she ended up, I bailed and jumped out of the canoe and like left her, and she like killed one with her paddle. It was a moment of me being like, my mama is so much more of a badass than me, and I need to just remember that. And like, she is tougher than me, but I also have her blood in me. I also, you know, find strength in it. But yeah, the friggin' snakes. So yes, Pam asked me to make something for the lobby of that hotel. And I was so excited to make something in New Orleans. New Orleans is my favorite place. I love it so much. And so I was like, well, I'm sorry that I'm going to do this, and this is scary, but this is going to work out, these snakes. And they're porcelain snakes, but they're also in nautical knots. And what I thought was that it was, you know, that place is so threatened by hurricanes and weather and being so far underwater that it's kind of an altar to the water. I mean, look, she designed a hotel in Louisiana. What are you gonna, you can get some snakes?
I think one of the most incredible things you've ever created, Irene's dioramas. Gosh. In our store in Brentwood. We talk about that. Well, and not just that, in her store in Melrose also. I mean,
I love Irene so much, and I'm just so, I just can't believe that I get to be in her orbit, you know, because she's such an amazing artist, and the fact that she let me just really go, you know, crazy and express myself. Yes, I did. I met with her for her flagship store through Pam. Pam had me come in. I had done a diorama at the Ace Hotel in Palm Springs, which was one of Pam's first hotels with commune. But it's very traditional. You know, they wanted it to look like a kind of, I don't know, like a weird little museum kind of funky diorama with taxidermy and stuff, and it has like this coyote in it. Anyway, that was really, so Pam had me come in for Irene's job, and Irene was like, I would love to have taxidermied birds that I put my jewelry on, you know. I was like, okay, well, that, you know, I know how to do that. And like, literally, like, calling up those taxidermists. I mean, that is a real weird world.
Oh yeah.
And I, you know, I was like, what do you got in the freezer? You know, I mean, it's like that. Oh, it's kind of creepy. So I started like getting geared up with like finding old, beautiful birds that were stuffed. And then I was like, you know, it's kind of gross. So I had another meeting with Irene, and I was like, you know, the taxidermist, I don't know about you putting your beautiful jewelry
on dead birds,
on these dead birds, you know, like, it's kind of gross, and like, stuff happens and you have to kind of keep them up. And I was like, what about we do, I will make your birds, like, and I will couture them. Like, I will just, I will go crazy and I'll make taxidermy in a way, but it's like, it will be like, I'll make it with my hands.
Well, and this is something I do want to ask you. It is, I think this is one of the most extraordinary things about you, is that you work in every single medium. Like you can, I mean, I think that's very unusual for an artist. You're like MacGyver, like give you any material and you can make some incredible piece of art out of it.
Well, Laura, thank you for saying it that way. It's also like, it's scary for me because I think I have the ideas, you know, like I mean, whenever I see something, somebody's like, oh, somebody ripped you off or whatever. And I'm like, they can't take the idea I haven't had yet. So, yeah, exactly. But I have the ideas. And this is an example of it. It's like, I had the idea for Irene. I had that meeting. I was like, I'm going to couture your birds. And then I left the meeting and I was like, okay, lady, who's going to do that? Like, I don't know how to do that. Like, I'm not a couture, you know, like, I don't even know what I'm talking about. Like, I don't know how to do that. Like, and that is, you know, so it's nice that you say that, but it's also like, I have these big plans. I mean, the same thing with the snakes. I was like, I'm going to make these porcelain snakes out, and they're going to be in knots. And then I left the meeting and I was like, I'm not a ceramicist. Like, I don't know how to work with porcelain. I broke so many snakes. Like, they all popped. Like, anyway, it's a plus and a minus.
And how do you tap into that? Like, how do you have the confidence of that? And then two, I guess, how do you tap into the, I don't even know what it is, like the zen of being like, I am creating this.
I can see it, you know, like I can see the idea and then I just have to figure out how to get there, you know, and it usually takes me quite a while, you know, like I'm not fast, you know, like it takes me quite a while to like sort of figure out how I'm going to do it. And I get really grumpy and really discouraged and I beat myself up and I'm like, I can't do this. I don't know how to do this. I don't know where I'm going to, you know, like, and then I figure it out, you know, and then I have that in my tool belt. And I guess that's what's interesting to me, you know, like is not doing the same thing over and over. And when I talk about, you know, the cookbooks and the cupcakes and that, I'm like, oh yeah, I used to do that. Like, I don't ever do that now, you know, like, right. Really like, I just keep wandering along. It's funny because now I'm at a stage where people, they don't usually want me to repeat, you know, what I've already done. It's rare that like somebody's like, will you make me some beautiful birds like at Irene Newirth store, you know? And it's good and bad because it's like, that would be, gosh, that in a way I'm like, that would be such a easy treat to like, oh, I know how to do that, you know? I would never make birds for somebody else, you know, like that. It's like, those are Irene's.
It's such an unusual path or journey for an artist, I think.
I mean, it doesn't always work. There is a level of trust. I mean, you have to trust my idea, you know, like, because you probably haven't seen it before from me.
Have there been times when it didn't work?
I just am thinking of one because it just sort of happened. but I will say in my defense, somebody came to me to do something and they had an idea. It wasn't my idea. They had an idea and they wanted me to do it for them. I never really quite saw it. And so I was trying to give them what they were wanting from me, but it didn't really.
But that's a good lesson too, you know, like if you don't see it, then you can't make it.
Yes.
I guess.
Yes.
Do you have any dream projects that you have not done yet?
I still feel like, even though I did the kids cooking show, I did different versions of it, you know, like I still feel like that. I loved doing that. I loved doing that, not necessarily being in it, like, even though, like, I mean, that's hard for me. I'm not really a performer, but so I don't that's not what I'm craving, but I do love the, I love a project that has a bunch of different layers. And I feel like I haven't explored that as much as I'd like, you know, to do things that like, oh, it has this component and has this component, has this, you know, like the kind of, you know, multi-layered things are exciting to me. And I just hope that I keep getting to do different things, but dioramas are always, you know, they'll always be around. I started a diorama club in the, I guess I was in the 2000s, you know, that was for real, like grownups making dioramas, and I've somehow managed to make it into a job a little bit.
So we've been in the pandemic for a year. Have you found yourself creating? Have you been more or less creative, or what has it brought out of you?
It's like what I know how to do. It's like, and especially when I have nervous energy, I started making some granny squares. You remember a granny square? It's like a blanket. It's a crocheted Afghan kind of.
Yeah. Yes. Right.
It's like a little square. They're usually like different colors and you put them all together.
Right.
I made so many granny squares. I could like upholster my entire neighborhood. Like it's like I couldn't stop making granny squares.
Well, what did you do with them?
Well, I did put them all together. The blanket is it's too big. It's like it's so big. I kind of want to upholster a wall with it, you know, like, because it is, I just couldn't stop. So anyway, I've had a lot of nervous energy and my hands need to move. You know, I do a calendar every year that's drawings of food, and I always have a different theme for it. And I didn't do one last year because I was busy. And people were like, I can't believe you like didn't do one. But I'm so glad that I didn't do one for 2020. But I did feel like I have to make one for 2021, and it has to be really joyful. I have to just dig deep. I did one that the theme was ice cream. It's just, I just went for it. I'm like, extra sprinkles, cherry on top, friggin' we need some ice cream. So I worked on that, and then I just started bumming out. It's funny. It's like the past couple months have been like, oh, I hit a wall, and I just started making these piñatas.
Ooh.
I've made so many piñatas. I'm like, I need it to feel like a party. I hung them all up in my living room. Like they're all, I did all these celestial themed ones. So they're all like, you know, I did a full moon and I did a aurora borealis and I did a, you know, lightning bolt and a cloud and a constellation and a, you know, like I cannot stop. It is so crazy.
Are they filled with candy?
They're not. I mean, I call them piñatas, but I hope they don't get hit by a stick, but maybe that's fun too. I mean, maybe that's part of it. I don't know why I'm making them. I can't stop.
What advice would you share with somebody who is a young artist?
I think the main thing that I have learned is just to really, really trust yourself and trust your vision. And that's all there is. And you are not gonna, I mean, I don't know. Often people gave me the advice of like, okay, well, find somebody that you respect and see how they did it. Like, look how they did it. Like, right. How did they, but that doesn't make sense to me. It's like, well, Jane Goodall, Willy Wonka, Prince, like, okay, can't follow them, and that's who I love. And so
I do see purple suits there as a theme.
Well, okay. The outfits I can follow, but the creation, you just have to trust your voice. You just really do. And look, there's going to be so many people and there's going to be so many obstacles that get in your way and question that, but that's all you've got.
One of the most important questions on the podcast is, what did you wear to prom? And you wait to hear.
Oh dear, prom. Oh my goodness. I mean, I have so many taffeta stories happening in my playing in my head right now. I'm like, do you want prom or winter formal? I mean, like, I don't know.
I'll take either. But just give me a highlight. I mean,
there was so much taffeta. Is that what happens now?
Do people no, taffeta doesn't happen as much now, but yeah, there. I mean, I'm your age. There was so much taffeta.
I mean, that's what everybody. Yeah, I wore to prom a cherry red taffeta dress. I had it made. It was spaghetti strap. It was like a spaghetti strap. It was kind of fitted on top. It had giant skirt. It was so red. I can't. It was maraschino cherry red, not natural cherry red. Like, it was so red, and I had dyed matching shoes.
Yes, you did.
Remember that part?
Yeah, girl. Of course I do.
Where you go to the mall and you get your shoes and then you have them dyed. Yeah, it was so red. I actually would like to, I wish I still had it.
Yeah, your mom doesn't have it?
No, everything goes at my mom's house.
What did you wear to prom? Has anybody asked you? Well, one was super boring. One I loved was blue, like a French blue Laura Ashley polished cotton sweetheart neckline, puffy sleeves. Yes. And it was cotton. And I mean, it was so pretty. And then a sash and a bow and all that.
I really like to see that. I was way more mall. I was kind of tacky. I feel like it was kind of tacky. My winter formal look was a little more together. It was plaid taffeta.
Cool.
Right?
That's really cool.
Green plaid taffeta with black velvet puffy sleeves.
Yeah, I think I had that dress actually.
That was actually cooler.
Claire, I love talking to you, and I appreciate so much you taking the time to talk to me.
Laura, what a treat.
What We Wore is produced by Capital and Balto Creative Media. The original song, Someone So Enchanting, was composed and performed by Britt Drozda. What We Wore is a member of the Queen City Podcast Network, powered by Ortho Carolina. Find out more at queencitypodcastnetwork.com.